Welcome into the Irish NFL show, and it's time to reflect on some Jacksonville Jaguars talk, a team that many people this side of the world know very well from the UK game, and now they've benched into the Republic of Ireland, America over the course of the last 12 months. Delighted to have Brent Martineau join us from Action Sports Jags, the leading channel in Jacksonville. It's great to have you on board to talk a bit of Jags today.
Hey, good to be here. Always good to talk about the Jags. It's a wild time, of course. A big offseason, I think, for the Jaguars to get things right.
And Kieran, you're not too far away, so it's great to have you back on board. Our local resident in the U.S. that joins us on the show week to week.
Yeah, CBS 47, Fox 30, Action News Jax. That's my local channel. You know, I watch Brent on, my nephew plays high school football with Menendez. So, you know, I catch the Friday night blitz, and Brent's all over the place. Brent's got his finger on the pulse with everything going on with the Jags from what's going on here to the stadium talk. So we'll get into a little bit of that. So let's talk Jags.
Brent, busy day for all teams yesterday, I guess, in terms of making a decision who they should tag. I think it was inevitable that the Jags would indeed tag Josh Allen. And I suppose the impact of that is we've seen other players released. Williams, you know, probably a leading cornerback that teams will go after. But Ridley's probably the interesting one. He's had a productive enough season coming back into the NFL. Where do you stand on how the last 48 hours have kind of transpired and how it kind of factors into what you believe they'll do in free agency come next week when it all kicks off?
Yeah, I'm not surprised at all how it shook out. I think there was a trend for this. Even if you look last year, Evan Ingram, right? The Jaguars wanted to keep Evan Ingram the tight end. He wanted to be here. It still took the franchise tag and then months until really they figured out a contract extension. I think these things are trickier than people want to admit. When you have a negotiation, you got to remember there's two sides. It doesn't matter what the Jags want to do. They still got to get the other side to dance with them a little bit. And in this situation, because the Jags didn't extend Josh Allen before last season, he's got a lot of leverage. He's coming off a 17.5 sack season. He wants to probably see, or at least his representation, wants to see what happens next week in free agency. The price might even go up higher for the Jags. And I think Ingram's people probably wanted to do the same last year. What was interesting is the tight end position wasn't as lucrative in free agency as many thought. So it didn't pan out that way once they let it play out. But I think knowing Josh Allen's coming off a 17.5 sack season, 26 years old, the Jags need him. He would be a coveted guy if he was a free agent on the open market. I think that gives a lot of leverage to Josh's side. And then the Calvin Ridley stuff, again, I just don't think we can be surprised by it. He now becomes a supply and demand thing in the National Football League. He is going to carry a lot of demand next week when the open market hits. And if I'm his representation, I know that. The guy that I've got is going to command a lot of money. Why would I jump into a relationship and a deal with the Jags when it might be more lucrative to wait?
Just a follow-up on that. Do you think the Mike Evans deal that was secured this week kind of impacts on that as well? Many a wide receiver, and Ridley included, will look at this and go, with Mike Evans arguably the number one receiver on the market, that kind of goes away now. And everybody moves up a little and a little bit more opportunity to kind of secure a long-term deal.
Yeah, I think it does. But I also think we have to be a little careful to be carried away with comparing the two apples to apples, if you will, because Evans is a number one wide receiver with a Hall of Fame resume. Calvin Ridley can be a number one-ish wide receiver, depending on how you look at him. And it's totally different than what he's done in his career versus what Evans has done. So, yes, supply and demand-wise, Ridley becomes the top guy on the market if he hits the market. Absolutely, he'll be coveted. The other part of this is the fact that there are a lot of receivers coming out in the draft. Drafting a receiver is not hard to do, and the hit rate is usually pretty good now. There's a lot of good young receivers in the National Football League, so I don't think you're stuck with trying to sign Calvin Ridley. I just think we here in Jacksonville all like the idea of it because if you could have had Josh and Ridley done, you feel good about covering up other holes in the draft and free agency. So answer your question, certainly it's a benefit. Calvin Ridley was probably smiling more than Mike Evans when that deal was done. But there are some other things at play. I do not think it's logical to believe that Calvin Ridley should command the same contract as Mike Evans. So he actually might now fit in a better slot than we once thought.
Yeah, Brandon, I think the fact that, you know, the Jags announced some releases yesterday, Foley Fatukasi and Darius Williams and Rayshon, and that freed up, I don't know, I think it was about 25, something like that. So now they're looking at about 46, 47 in cap space. Do you think they're going to, you know, with those releases, do you think they're now kind of, you know, almost not resigned, but they're like, all right, we got a little bit of a safety valve here if Calvin, you know, decides to go somewhere else? And do you think the current crop of wide receivers the Jags have is going to be enough to kind of kick on from last year? Because, you know, when they lost Christian Kirk towards the tail end of the season, that was a big problem. And, you know, Trevor Lawrence lost a big weapon with that. So where do you see, you know, do you see them if Ridley does walk, where do you see or who do you see as replacements?
My guess is they'll get a Band-Aid in free agency to some degree, but I don't think it's going to be a high-profile one. I think Ridley is the best option. If you're talking about available veteran wide receivers. So you're definitely going to lose if you get the next guy or the third guy or the fifth guy. And you might save a little bit of money, but you're also probably not going to get as quality a player, at least that we can predict quality of play. Now, here's what this does. This bet says Zay Jones is staying. So now you have Christian Kirk and Zay Jones. I think if they had re-signed Ridley, you wondered if Zay Jones would stay. So I don't know if you were going to keep the full complement anyway. And a lot of things that we're discussing on our show is, why don't they go all in more for Trevor Lawrence for this offensive side of things? Why wouldn't you try to keep Calvin Ridley and draft another receiver as a young guy for the future that can grow with Trevor Lawrence? They both can be young players in the league for a long time to come. So I don't really look at the receiver position as much if they lose Ridley as a free agency deal. I think they will have Christian Kirk, Evan Ingram, Zay Jones. Obviously, ETN is a weapon in the backfield. And then I think they need to do something in the draft. I think they will now pivot from saying, hey, we're going to spend $17, $18 million a year on Calvin Ridley. Instead, we're going to go get a young receiver on a deal with maybe that second pick that they would have had to give up if they signed Ridley. And I would actually advocate for the first round pick. I think it becomes priority number one to put more stuff around Trevor Lawrence. So 17 or pick number or round number one or round number two, I got to believe the Jags go receiver. And I know that's not a Trent Baalke thing or an organizational thing often, but I got to believe they do that for their young quarterback.
Brent, five of the eight teams that were in the divisional round the previous season didn't make it back, the Jags being one of them. And going into the season, the Jags were clear favorites, you know, going for the division, the AFC South. And it didn't transpire that way. We've seen really, I suppose, bounce back years from the Colts with new head coach and obviously the Texans starting on in itself. Where are you on the Trevor Lawrence production and where he's developed? Because at one stage in November, and Kieran was there representing the show at the Bengals game on the Monday night, there was talk of the Jags being the one seed, potentially the two seed, and it didn't transpire whatsoever. I don't think anybody saw the kind of fall down coming, not making the playoffs. And he was inconsistent, but he did have a lot of injuries last year. Are you in any way concerned, or do you really firmly believe put the production around in terms of the players, which we just alluded to, and we'll see him bounce back next year?
We are sitting here in the early stages of March. I said the same thing coming out of the season in January. I'd pay him right now. I'm a big believer in him. He's 24 years old. I think the Jags organization set him up to fail in year number one. I don't even know how you can count that year with Urban Meyer and the mess that was going on here in Jacksonville. He bounces back very nicely with Doug Peterson, has a big year too, especially the second half. And up until that game that you were referencing, until he got hurt, which looked like a terrible injury and became one that he could play through a little bit, he was playing good football again. He was ripping it up. He had beaten Tennessee with a good performance, Houston with a good performance. They scored, 30-plus points against the Bengals? I mean, they were starting to really roll with Trevor again at the perfect time of year. I think there's plenty of evidence that shows that Trevor Lawrence is your guy. I think they know he's the guy. I think they're going to have to pay him like he's the guy. So I really haven't wavered on Trevor. I think he's the perfect CEO, if you will, of this organization, which is a quarterback. And in today's NFL, they need to be that. He represents the city well, represents the franchise well. He's only 24 years old. He's got a terrific skill set. Is he as good as everybody thought he was coming out of school? I don't think he's shown that yet. But I also think he's had some challenges along the way. I don't know if there's been a whole lot to trust here from Urban to other things, including his offensive line last year. I also think they led the league in drops in 2022 when he had his best season. And then he got the injuries the last 6 weeks of the year. And I think that's actually a positive in many ways. Not that he got hurt, but that he showed the toughness and resolve to want to keep playing and play through that stuff. So there's so much that I like. I could be wrong. I'd write him a check today, and I wouldn't lose an ounce of sleep about it.
Kieran, I was just going to I was just going to say to yourself, Kieran, you know, the amount of teams, and we discussed it on our own podcast, who are in dire need of a quarterback. It's even strange to even think to anybody who's even challenging or questioning Trevor Lawrence as a quarterback within this league.
Yeah, and I agree with pretty much everything Brent said. You know, he's the face of the franchise. He's very visible in the Jacksonville and the North Florida area. The one concern I would have, and it kind of came to prominence towards the end of the season, was the fumbles. You know, 12 fumbles last year, 12 fumbles in 22. It's that elephant in the room that, you know, people don't want to discuss. But it's going to be a huge year for Trevor. I mean, let's say Calvin sticks around, strong draft. There's a lot of picks in the draft. There's a lot of skill position players out there. It's going to be a big year for Doug Peterson, and we'll probably get on to him in a minute. But I'm pretty much on board with what Brent was saying about the upside for Trevor. I think he needs a couple more skill position players. You know, definitely they need an upgrade, and definitely some draft help with the running back position, because Etienne, he can carry the load himself. And if he's not, you know, if teams are figuring him out, then that's a problem. But another running back, another, you know, a nice wide receiver out of college in the first round, definitely bulk up that O-line, because that was a problem last year. But yeah, I have a lot of upside, and this is a big year for the Jags. I mean, we saw what Houston did last year. Houston are coming for the AFC South, and it's going to be a big one for the Jags this year to keep that train going.
Yeah, I think you guys both you said it, though, too, already. It's hard to predict in the NFL. Like, I get Houston is on the rise. I get Houston is the team to beat in the AFC South. They've earned that after this past year. I also don't think the separation is large between the Jags, maybe even the Colts as well in that conversation. And I also just watched the Jags be in the same exact situation and then flop at the end of the year. The NFL does not work this way. It doesn't just automatically go to the next thing. Now, there are some exceptions. Is C.J. Stroud, is Houston about to be the next Mahomes, the next Indy from years ago? I hate to say Patriots because it's hard to judge anybody like that, but are they going to be a perennial team? We don't know, but the trend in the NFL is that does not happen very often, right? So will they be able to handle success? Will they be able to handle a first-place schedule? The Jags had a first-place schedule versus a last-place schedule the year prior. Huge difference. Absolute major difference who you're playing week in, week out. Houston's going to have to handle that. I'm not saying they can't, but I think they're going to have to prove it that they can go back-to-back, especially with the kind of friction. It's a good division. Bottom line is it's a good division with a lot of quarterbacks and some pretty good coaching too.
The Colts would probably argue they were one play away from beating the Texans in that Week 18 game when they dropped that fourth down play, and things obviously evolved to a very different situation.
And what are we talking about? Are we talking about the Colts being the team to beat, or are we talking about the Texans or the Jags being the team? But that's how close it is. I think that's a great point.
Yeah, the margins.
Yeah, we're probably talking about Gardner Minshew potentially at this point.
And we wouldn't want to live that one down here, Jackson.
Oh boy, remember that.
Absolutely. Did he kind of come in for him? Just on Doug Peterson, because you touched on there, and you touched on Urban Meyer and the first year being essentially a fiasco and to ride off essentially for Trevor Lawrence. And they needed a kind of a stable head coach who had the experience, fantastic head coach in terms of he won the Super Bowl. A lot of aggressiveness last year in some of the games, going for a fourth down. That's his style of play. I recognize that there's a lot of head coaches like that now. Do you think at times a little bit more of a strategic head coach would find themselves winning those games, or is everyone bought into the nature of how he likes to play call certain games?
Yeah, I think you are who you are, and I don't mind being that. He won a Super Bowl like that. I think there's a reckless nature to it at times, but not really here in Jacksonville. I actually would say that about Detroit, right? People love the Lions and what Campbell's doing with his aggressive style. I actually thought there was a reckless nature of that at times. Like, you go to that Dallas game, and when they got the bad call and then they went for a 2-point conversion from the 7-yard line, it's like, come on, man, right? Like, why are we doing that? Like, what's the chances? But
he should have taken the field goal in the San Francisco game, people would argue.
I think you're right. That's another one. That's another great point. So I think you can be reckless. It's cool to be true to who you are, but you've got to still play out the scenarios, the emotions, the flow of games. It's what we say about analytics. It's okay to be true who you are, but they can't feel the emotions of a game. Those computers can't feel that. So that's why we have the human element to do that. I actually think Doug does a pretty good job of that. I think Doug is not just we're going for every fourth down. I think he's aggressive. I think he's still a pretty good offensive mind. I want Doug Peterson to take control of the organization. I think that's the biggest thing when it comes to Doug. I think he should be the heavy when it comes to him and Trent Baalke and the, some of the decisions that are being made. Sure, should be collaborative, but the guy holding the Lombardi Trophy has more impact to me. I also think it's not a knock on Press Taylor. Press Taylor, who obviously has drawn the ire of the fan base on calling plays. I don't feel that way. I don't think Press was that bad calling plays. I think the Jags were pretty bad executing plays at times. I also think their interior, their offensive line, took the complete run game out of the playbook, which would make it tough for any play caller. But that's not the point. The point is Doug Peterson won a Super Bowl beating Bill Belichick as a play caller and a head coach with the Philadelphia Eagles. You cannot tell me that Press Taylor's better than that guy. I want the guy who's better, who's leading my organization, to call plays. So I would like to see Doug do a couple of those things. Like, if it's Luke Fortner playing, is it Doug's decision or is it because they drafted him and they want to see him develop? I don't care about his development if he stinks. Make the decision that you've got to get better at that spot for your quarterback and your offense and make that call. I thought they could have easily played Tyler Shatley this year a couple of times to at least try it out. They never did it. So I think Doug needs to be a little bit more laying the hammer down and the guy in charge, and because I trust him. We should trust him. It's why they hired him. It's why he's making a lot of money in Jacksonville. It's why he did so many good things in 2022 to change this thing around. He needs to take the reins back, in my opinion. And that would be right now my biggest criticism of Doug. Just take it over, because I think that's Jags' best chance to do well in 24.
Brent, at the penultimate game of the season, the Panthers game, that that walkover, I interviewed Mia from 1010, Mia O'Brien. And one of the questions I asked, this was in the midst of the Jags slide, I said, is there a possibility that Doug might be on the hot seat? And this was the game, this was before the collapse in Tennessee. I just posted it out there. I said, you know, what do you think, you know, what might happen if you know, the playoffs aren't reached this year? And she said, he's fine, kind of similar to what you said. He's still, you know, they still believe in him. He's the man for next year and beyond. We saw a couple of weeks ago the coaching changes. Press Taylor, like you said, is still there. How do you feel about the upgrades or the updates in the coaching staff?
Yeah, the offensive ones were a little minimal. Running back and assistant offensive line coach. This is really centers around the defense. The defensive coordinator change was, I don't know how good it is. I don't know if Ryan Nielsen's good. What I do like, I like two things about them both. Well, three, really. If you go back to Mike Caldwell, I thought the guy did a pretty good job. He didn't do a great job. He had some inconsistencies, and they really failed down the stretch. And I think that eventually the inconsistencies and falling down the stretch ultimately cost him his job. And lack of development in some spots. Like, I still don't know if Devin Lloyd's good, and Mike Caldwell was a defensive coordinator, but he's also a former linebacker. Like, that's the guy you need to develop and see how good he's going to be. So I think there's a little bit of an inconsistency slash lack of trust there from Peterson to Caldwell. So I think getting rid of that helps. I also think renewed energy in a building with a guy like Ryan Nielsen never hurts. A lot of times when you get a new energy bump, things work out well. Look what Doug did in year one, right? We saw that coming off the Urban stuff. Sometimes that can be very beneficial. So I like it. The other part is I know the identity right away of Ryan Nielsen. He's going to be aggressive. He's going to get after you. That's what he's going to say. That's what he's going to preach. I think by the end of training camp, we will all have quotes from Ryan Nielsen that we can all quote from Ireland back here to Jacksonville. And I think that's when you know, like, who are the Jags? We struggle to answer that question a lot. I don't think you're going to answer that question with a question mark when it comes to Ryan Nielsen. And I like that. So those are the things I like about it. Honestly, I don't know how good he is, but he's been pretty decent over these last few years, and I think he will be pretty good. But make no mistake about it, this isn't a defensive football team. This is Doug Peterson and Trevor Lawrence. It should be an offensive football team. They are the ones, or that side of the ball, failed the organization this year more than anybody else. They were supposed to score 27, 28 points a game. They did it. They need to get cooking again on offense.
Ben, final question for me, and it's more around the plans of the stadium. We saw a really impressive piece come out in December around what the long-term plans of rebuilding the stadium. there's a keen focus over this side of the world because of the nature of the fact that they come over, play here. Well, play in the UK every year in terms of Wembley, and obviously last year did the back-to-back games, and it'd be interesting to see if the NFL consider that, going down that road again. But everyone's keen because we obviously can recognise the stadium in Jacksonville, and whether it is obviously a long-term aspiration, but it can't find me to move to London and everything that comes to that in terms of speculation. In terms of the strategy going forward for the ownership, if they get this stadium in place, does it bump the Jags up in sense of players will really consider going and playing there? Obviously, players are keen to play there anyway, but the more impressiveness that comes with the ownership and the organization in general.
Yeah, I don't know if it helps the player. It can't hurt. The Miller Electric Center where they just put in the practice facility certainly helps. It doesn't hurt. I think we are in a generation where some of those materialistic things, they're used to that. Some of these guys coming from big high school programs, obviously huge college programs, they have Taj Mahals that they play in, and they get all the benefits. So I think it does help to keep up with that part of it. I also think at the end of the day, if a player is picking between A, B, and C, I don't think they really look at the structure. I think they look at the offer in front of them and how much money is on the table. I think that wins the day. So, it can't...
Harsh reality.
That's the reality. I mean, most of the time, that's the reality. So, I think, I think, first of all, the stadium, I believe, is going to get done. I think it's going a little slower than people anticipated, but it has to get done. So it's going to get done in some way, shape, or form. That's my full belief. I've likened it to the Josh Allen contract. It has to get done. Right. So it will get done. We just don't know when and how and what it looks like. Yeah. So I think the Jags will, the city and everybody else will eventually do it. I think it will be a huge deal for the city of Jacksonville. One, to squash any other outside comment about moving to London, which I think we now believe is just a goofy idea that's a full-time thing. I don't think people are buying that anymore, but you still hear it from time to time. I think the Jags will have a place in London to play that game, maybe even two on the road game like we saw last year, and I think we could see it again this year.
Yeah,
no, the footprint, no doubt. But as you know, in Ireland, the NFL's footprint just about everywhere too, right? Grow the game, new fans, and I think the Jags are going to do that. But this is going to be home base. And that stadium could really mean a lot for not just the Jags, but the city and helping build up the city. As I say around here, what this place looks like in the latter 5 years of this decade, 28, 29, 30, could be something really cool, especially if Doug and Trevor take off and take this team to winning heights where we thought they were about 3 months ago. We thought they were on the verge. And if they can do that and find that, and that's a big if, I think we're about to settle into maybe some of the greatest years in the history of Jacksonville when it comes to the combination of sports and the feel of the city and the vibrancy and everything else.
Yeah. The reason why I kind of included that in the conversation is it just seems like it's gone a little quiet lately with the discussion. You know, Mayor Deegan, she went over to London, in the fall. And, obviously, we both live in the area, so we see in the news the back and forth about who's going to pay for it. Do you think that this is a rhetorical question, really, but the design maybe scaled back a little bit? And then there's the question, will they play in reduced capacity? Will they play in Gainesville? Will they play at Daytona? Will they play in, Orlando? So there's a lot of, like you, Brent, I do believe it'll get done, and it's going to be phenomenal for the downtown area. It's much needed, as you and I both know. And I think, I'm excited to see whatever it is, because, when we're there at a 1 o'clock game in October and it's 95 and it feels like 115, that roof that they put in Miami would be real nice. So I know, a lot of people I live and work with, in St. Augustine are, we're Jack Central down here, obviously, but they're really excited to get a much improved kind of game experience. Yes. The roof, concessions. It's an old stadium, as you and I both know, and I'm really excited to see what comes down the pike.
Yeah, but just to answer your question too, I believe it. I don't know this. I know this part. It is slower going. We thought maybe this thing could get done, I think by the end of this month maybe, but really more toward the end of April, and then in owners' meetings in May from the initial timetable. From what I understand, that could be pushed back a little bit longer now into the summer. I still expect by the time the season rolls around, I think we've got something done and maybe approved and all the rest. That's at least my expectation, not really inside information. The other part of it is where do they play? And the latest thing is they might not have to go for 2 years, 26 and 27. It might just be 27. If they do that, I'm curious if we get more games in London for that 1 year. Maybe. I don't know. Maybe two home games instead of a home and away, or could they even go back there a couple different times? Do we even have 18 games by that time in the National Football League? Who knows? That's the latest thing people are talking about. But I would say my guess right now is they end up playing in Orlando, and I don't think Jags fans like to hear that. But I think it's just the easiest way, especially if you're going to be gone for a year. And if you could play a potential two games or three games or something like that in London, now you're only talking about a handful of games in Orlando anyway. So I think that's where it shakes out. But there's a lot to be done to shake that out, you know, factually.
Mm-hmm.
And the NFL are locked in from 3 or 4 years out to have 8 games a season played internationally. So it certainly beckons for the Jags to be involved in that general conversation. Brent, we really appreciate your time. I imagine it's a quite a busy period for you after the week, and obviously free agency ahead, and then obviously we start considering what's ahead for the draft. So look forward to having you back on the show maybe after free agency near the draft, and we can have another conversation on what's ahead for the Jags.
Anytime, guys. Great to join you.
Thanks again, Brent. 1010 XL. Tune in 92.5.